Hey everyone, Matt Cause here, but I'm assuming you know that if you've listened to this podcast more than once. By the way, if this is the first time you're listening to the pod, I really appreciate it. And to everyone out there, all the listeners, all the reviews, don't think it goes unnoticed. And remember to, I think, what is it, subscribe, rate, review. That's what I always hear on other podcasts. I'm not too sure how it works on my own. Is it irresponsible of me? Yeah, it is a little bit, but as loud and obnoxious as I can be, I am horrible when it comes to self-promotion. I wanted to do a little bit of a cold open for my next interview because I don't really feel I did my best work. It's with Mie Goddard. You'll meet her in a moment. And she just has this really cool story. And I want to thank Stephen Ranger, who's past guest on this podcast, who helped set up this interview with her. And there's not a lot of winemakers where their profile is they were born in South Korea, and she comes from a family that isn't into wine, not a wine-making family. The first wine she fell in love with was Bordeaux, and now she's making incredible Beaujolais. I mean, really good Beaujolais wine. I mean, go look at the Jancis Robinson website. They love her stuff. And I just felt in this interview, I don't know why, I felt I could have done a better job. I was going over it, I was editing it, and there was questions that I missed and information I wanted to get out there. So I just wanted to give a brief little intro before you meet her. And what's cool about these wines is these are not your average Beaujolais. And let me say, I love your average Beaujolais. I love Beaujolais Nouveau and just the simple stuff that you can get for 12, 13, 15 bucks at the LCBO. They have a place on my table. They have a place in my cellar. And sometimes when you say a wine is simple and uncomplicated, well, that's fine, but is it good? Sometimes the best wines are, can you make simple and uncomplicated tasty with just enough depth that makes you appreciate it? So again, I'm just saying that on the front end. These wines are, these are your Beaujolais for people that can't afford Burgundy, and most of us can't. And it's a real treat when we drink a well-made Burgundy because you're going to be spending usually minimum $75, $80 minimum. And at a restaurant, you can double that price. For instance, her Beaujolais Village was very fresh and it's nice acidic spine. There was more dark cherry depth than I was expecting. When I see the word Beaujolais Village, I have a certain stereotype in my head of what I'm going to expect on the nose and on the palate. And I didn't get it with this one. And we tried four different wines. And one of the cool things was one of her single vineyard stuff, her Morgon Courcelette. The 2019 versus the 2020 couldn't have been more different. Like literally couldn't have been more different. And I love that. I love a good vintage variation. And the crazy thing is the 2020, I wasn't even a big fan of it. It was good, but compared to the 2019, which unfortunately you can't find anymore, I thought the 2019, if you can find it, the Mie Goddard, her 19 Morgon Courcelette, grab it, find it. I think the 20 needs just a little bit more time to open up, or just another year or so sitting and just laying down a little bit. And then the Côte de Pie, it's P-Y. I'm going to mispronounce it. Pie, P. The fourth wine we tried, also incredible. And what I love about these wines is they're big, they are brooding, they're complex. These are wonderful, wonderful examples of Beaujolais, and these are great wines to get once you, like most of us, we get priced out of Burgundy, with the exception of those couple times a year. I want to give a shout out to Stephen Ranger. If you want to find some really cool wines, rangerwine.com. I really appreciate whenever anyone who works in consignment companies introduces me to different producers, because anyone who listens to this pod knows I just love good stories. I'm just a monster for content, always seeking it out. And the more of it I can get, the better. All right, that's enough of me yammering. You know, got a lot more cool stuff coming on the pod, and got some places with some winemakers from Côte de Rhône. I'm trying to set up a bunch with Alsace. Tried some really great Alsatian Rieslings, Pinot Gris, excuse me, and actually some really smoky Pinot Noirs. But that's for another day. For now, let's get to it. Winemaker from Beaujolais, Mie Goddard.
The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. I am back at the Vintage Conservatory, one of the coolest places to drink wine, to store wine. If you haven't been here, highly, highly, highly recommend. And I'm here also in honor with Ranger Wines with Mi Gadad. Mi, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast today.
Thank you.
You have a very unique story. You are the first person I've ever interviewed, South Korean-born woman making world-class Beaujolais, and you didn't come from a winemaking family. If I think of the hundreds of people I've interviewed, you might have one of the most interesting backgrounds and histories, like journey into wine. I just want to start here. Where was the first moment you realized wine was something that you wanted to be a big part of your life?
Actually, I was in biology studies in Lyon. And actually, it's my father who told me about wine, because when I was younger, I had a passion about cooking, and I didn't want to be a chef. Mm-hmm. So, and I wanted to also study sciences. So the combination of all this make me go into wine.
So you love cooking, you love science, but you didn't want to be a cook.
No.
I was doing some reading that one of your first real wine moments was a Bordeaux blend, is that right?
Yes, exactly. My parents offered to us present for our 18 years old anniversary.
Yeah.
And I asked them to bring me with my sister to Bocuse. Mm-hmm. Restaurant, because I like gastronomy, so that's I wanted that for my present. And I discovered what was wine at this moment. It was a Bordeaux, but I don't remember the name of this Bordeaux. Mm-hmm. And I just realized it could be really interesting to drink wine and to know more about wine.
So then you go from, and so it was a Bordeaux that got you. I imagine there's a lot of people that Bordeaux is what gets them. So then I was wondering if we can jump from you trying this Bordeaux blend to you were studying in both France and Oregon.
Okay, so the Bordeaux just made me realize that wine could be interesting. If I didn't have this experience, I wouldn't have the idea to study wine science. Mm-hmm. Because of these experiences, I just realized that, okay, wine can be interesting. And after it was, there was maybe 2 or 3 years after that to just had the choice to study wine. Mm-hmm. And because I was in biology, I went to biochemistry because it was the most
relevant to,
yeah,
to
yeah,
wine?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Relevant to study enology.
Mm-hmm. I guess it's something that people sometimes forget, is that when you think about wine, you sort of forget the science that goes behind it. So all of your studies, it almost was leading you to where you are now. How important is just knowledge of science when it comes to making wine?
It's to have a better understanding about what it is happening. But I don't know if it's the most relevant way to make wine. Mm-hmm. It just gives you a background.
Okay.
And since I didn't have any background, because my family is not from the wine field, I think I could have a better understanding about a sort of understanding about wine. I don't know if I am clear about that.
Well, for me, the reason I'm asking is because I know when you make wine, it is about everything that happens in the vineyard. And it's about, you know, just letting nature do its job, and you want to be minimal intervention. But still, when it comes to, you know, when to pick the grapes and the impact of the sun, and there is still good elements of science that goes into making wine. And I imagine just having that knowledge at least made it easier for you when you started to make your own wine in Beaujolais.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned your family. What was their reaction? What was your family's reaction when you told them, Mom, Dad, I'm going to go make great Gamay?
I am going to make wine that for me, that's it. It's, I mean... It's a big adventure to make wine since it takes some time to make wine. I mean, from the pruning until the bottling, you have about 2 years.
Were they excited for you? Were they nervous? Were they?
I think for my parents, at the first place, they just didn't want me to work in the vineyard to make it more easier for me.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to do is to work in the vineyard. Mm-hmm. I mean to have all the process done by myself with my decisions about how to manage the vineyard and how to make wine. And I wanted to be my own decision.
I got some other questions for your parents, but I want to go back for a second. Mm-hmm. You went from all your studies in France and in Oregon. After that, your next step was selling Burgundy. Was that right? Were you at all in the wine consignment or the selling of wine?
No, I didn't sell any Burgundy wines at all. I was agent for enologic products.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
For 2 years, I worked in that, but I was not really interested in selling enologic products, but I did that because I needed to work. So
right. Mm-hmm. So let's go to 2013. This was around the time you started to find your properties in Beaujolais. Mm-hmm. What first attracted you to Beaujolais?
I fell in love with this region actually during a testing with some friends we had in the Beaujolais region. So we tested some wines in different estates. And I was really impressed about the wine's quality. Mm-hmm. And also what made me think I could create my estate in the Beaujolais region, it was the landscapes and the atmosphere there was in the Beaujolais region, because it's really nice. Mm-hmm. To be in this region.
Is it how different is it than? Yeah. And I've only driven through it once, so I don't know it as well. But mm-hmm. I find Bordeaux, and these are generalizations, mm-hmm. but Bordeaux is much bigger and grander. Mm-hmm. Burgundy is very secretive, and none of the winemakers wants you anywhere around them. Mm-hmm. So then what is Beaujolais like for, let's say, for wine lovers who are traveling through that area?
People are really generous. Mm-hmm. In general. What we call this in French, I don't know the translation in English, but convivial, which is really nice to be around, mm-hmm. to have drinks, to be...
Casual, cordial,
yeah,
relaxed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So that this one, sorry, I want to hear about your some of your older vines. You bought some old vines from a winemaker, mm-hmm. who was looking to retire. I'd love to hear more about this story of how you found your plots of land.
Because I knew a person in the Beaujolais region who knew a lot of people. He told me, maybe you can contact this person because I know he's going to be retired soon. And so he was not the owner, but he was the métayer. In France, we have different type of location, of renting, métayage or fermage, and he was métayer. And so I called him, and he told me, yes, you have to call this person. And so I called this person. So the owner, and he didn't really knew if he wanted to sell the property or just to find another person to mm-hmm. work. And at the end, he sold it, and I was here, so I was kind of lucky.
Yeah. Well, how did you convince him? Because there's some. I mean, you have, and we'll talk about your specific wines, but you're in the Morgon, and you have some very well known, you know, not a lot, but a couple hectares of some, you know, very well known prestigious plots of land in terms of where the grapes are sourced from. How did you convince him?
I didn't really convince him. I think it was more about if he would have to find someone else to work on his property. He would have to renovate the estate. Mm-hmm. So it costs a lot of money.
Right.
And so I don't know, he chose this I don't know.
You don't know?
Actually, I don't really know. Yeah. I just know I was here. I said, okay, I am really interested in working on these plots. But mm-hmm.
And then you said you got a little bit lucky.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. It's pretty, you know, it's. I mean, good for you. I mean, sometimes in life it's just about timing.
Yeah, exactly.
And, yeah, being mm-hmm. in the right time in the right place. So, okay, so your family wasn't much into wine. How are they now? Are you like, do they have the same wine taste today in 2023 that they did in 2013? Or how do they view it now?
I think they, because they helped me at the beginning, and my sister also helped me since the beginning, but just during harvest. Right now, they have a better understanding about what is the work in the vineyard and on an estate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How were those first couple of years for you?
It was hard working. I spent 7 days a week, so all the week working, and yes, it was a lot of work at the beginning. Yeah.
How different are you now? Terms of making wine versus when you got started, what has changed in you?
I would say with experiences I am less stressed, if I can say like this, but the work I do from the beginning and now, it's about the same. I mean, nothing has really changed, except that I know I have a better knowledge right now of what I am doing mm-hmm. than at the beginning.
Yeah, so more comfortable mm-hmm. in the decisions, because if you're deciding, you know, when to pick and that kind of stuff, and things about pruning, you know, there's, if you're early on doing it, I imagine you're a little more nervous versus now more comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
that makes sense. Tell me a little bit about the wines. And again, you can get these wines, Ranger Wines. You can go online. You can find them. Domaine Mie Godard. What are we going to be trying today?
Trying the Beaujolais Village from the vintage 2021.
Mm-hmm.
The Morgon Corselette 2018, and the Corselette 2020 vintage. And the last one will be the Côte du Pi 20.
What should people know about Beaujolais Village in terms of, or just yours? How would you describe yours? Because, you know, a lot of times when I think of, you know, Beaujolais, I have a certain image in my head of just, you know, expressive red fruit and very bright, very fresh, but they're all different. You know, if you were going to describe your wines, your Beaujolais Village, how would you describe them?
I just would like to introduce a little bit more about my style of wine, because my philosophy of work is to make wine which can be kept. So I work on the texture of the wine, so with the tannins, and the acidity, which is for me the second parameter, which can give a long time life for wine. So I would say the style of my wine is not on the fruitiness and only on the fruitiness. It's a combination of fruits, tannins, and acidity, if I can say like this. So the first one, the Beaujolais Village, is on, I would say it's a difficult for me to say that, how can I say that? The Beaujolais Village wouldn't be only fruit.
Mm-hmm.
There will be some also some structure.
Usually with Beaujolais Village, it's not made for aging, but hearing you talk about it, you have a bit of a different stylistic approach. You want ones that are a little bit more ageable?
Yes, exactly, yes.
10 years from now, how would your Beaujolais Village be tasting? Or how would you want it to be tasting?
So the Beaujolais Village, I'm not sure it will be ageable in 10 years.
How long? Okay, then let me ask it in a different way.
Mm.
I buy a bottle of your 2021 Beaujolais Village. How long can I put it down before drinking it?
Okay, I think from 5 to 8 years, something.
And then what's the difference? Just because for people listening, you know, a lot of times people want to learn about Beaujolais.
Mm-hmm.
So Beaujolais, what would you say is the big difference between your Beaujolais Village and your corselet.
So the corselet is another appellation. It's Morgon. So and I would say the differences between the both is the Morgon corselet would be more edgeable than the Beaujolais Village. And also what makes a big difference is the type of soil you have on those two different appellations. And the work, the vinification is different also, since I try to make the Beaujolais village more approachable, easier, younger. And for the Morgon Corselet, I tried to find a balance between the drinkability, young but not so young. It has to be edgeable.
And then the final one, the Côte de Paix. What were the difference between that one and the Corselet?
Morgon Corselet will be more. I don't have the gourmand. I don't know if you have
gourmand, big.
It would be gourmand. I think the exact translation is greedy, but I don't know if it's the accurate term for.
When I think of gourmand, I think of like a big meal. Yes, greedy would come to mind, but you know, lots of just a gourmand, is someone who just likes to enjoy all foods and just suck the marrow of life. That's what I think of when the term gourmand.
Yeah, exactly. So the corselet in French is more greedy, if I can say like this. And so the differences in terms of terroir is Côte du Pi is on volcanic rocks. Mm-hmm. And the Côte du Pi will be more refined and acidic. I mean, fresh in the style.
I guess what I want to know is if I have a glass of the corselet and I have a glass of the Côte du Pi, what would be like the main difference between them? Because I think for a lot of times people want to learn about Beaujolais, and if they see, you know, different terms, what they're going to expect on the nose and in the taste. Just like the difference between left bank and right bank Bordeaux, there's going to be differences. Yeah. So what would be the difference?
So the Morgon Corselet 20 will be with more rounded, with a lot of black fruit. Blackberries and Côte du Pi will be more complex in the style and with more freshness also.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What should people know about Morgon? Because there's so many different appellations in Beaujolais, and obviously you've gone around and tasted from all over, obviously. But if people see a bottle of a Cru Beaujolais and it's from Morgon, what should they be expecting in general? And I know that generalizations, there's never one style for every type. But what when you think of more the Beaujolais from Morgon, what do you normally think of?
So in general, Morgon will give some wine which can be more edgeable, and it gives big wines with more concentration, if I can say it like this.
How important is organic for you? It's for making your wines, you know, organically, having the organic certification. How important is that for you?
It's not so important.
No?
But, no, it's not so important because I used to work organically before the conversion.
Right.
And so for me, the most important is the work I am doing at the vineyard. And so I know what I am doing.
Right. So it's not about having a sticker on your wine. It's about the fact that you're going to respect the environment, or else you're not going to make wine that's as good.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, I wanted to make the conversion because it's for the environment, but it is also for the health of my employee, for instance, who are working at the vineyard or harvesting. And so for me, it's the same importance as the environment. So
I haven't even thought. I haven't thought about that of that one before. That having it organic is better for the health of the employees.
Employee, me, everybody. I mean, it's important.
When you're at the vineyard, when are you happiest? What brings you the most joy when you are is it walking in the fields? Is it you know when it's in barrel? Like when are you me? When are you happiest when you are in your vineyards?
It's to be outside first. Mm-hmm. It's important.
Yeah,
and also to have a beautiful landscape when you walk outside.
Mm-hmm.
It's important for me.
The vintages we're going to try. How many? And I should know this, but what was your first vintage?
It was 2013.
2013.
So it's 10 years since now.
So
I
you've been
started.
Doing it for 10 years.
Yeah. Yes.
And what's your future? How long? What would you like to be doing? Maybe nothing else. Maybe just continue the exact same thing. But I'm curious. Maybe there's other plots of land you'd like to buy, or other vineyards in Beaujolais. But What is your future plans?
So my future plans is to increase the size of the estate.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have to replant some of my plots, so I have to think about that. So that means I have to increase the size. And if I increase the size, I have to find a new winery, new location, or to build a mm-hmm. new winery. So, yes, there is a lot of project.
Are you starting to look? Have you got your eyes on anything?
Yes, I am always looking for new plots because it's not easy to find new plots. So I have to look after.
So you're hoping to get lucky again?
Yes, exactly.
And we really appreciate you doing this. And as Stephen Ranger and... you know, to Ranger Wine, we're going to be tasting four of your different wines today, and I'm excited to try them all. And I think more people are starting to like Beaujolais over the last decade, because, and I'd be curious your thoughts on this, but there seems to be a shift to away from less bigger, heavier wines and more lighter, fresher, more acidic red wines.
Yes, there is a shift, yes, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Yeah.
I can't wait to try your wines.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks everyone for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.